the first day of my new life began with ice and ended with flames. As soon as I woke, I was wide-eyed awake. Under my badger skin it was warm, and for a little while I lay still as a huntsman in a covert. I stared around me at the high hall where I have slept and woken almost every day of my life. I tried to wake my brother and sister by making faces at them. I listened for a moment to my grandmother Nine snuffling, and one of the hounds groaning and grinding his teeth. Then I leapt up. The whole world was waiting for me. When I unbolted the hall door and tugged it open, the ice in the jams clattered down. Then I saw Gatti. She was standing beside the mounting block with my horse, Pip. I had to look twice, because she was dressed in dirty sacking, sparkling with frost, and all I could see were her large river eyes and one fair curl. "Gatti," I exclaimed. "Jankin said I could. How long have you been here?" Gatti ignored my question. "The biggest saddlebags we got," she said. I kicked at the shards and thorns of pearly ice, and barefoot I walked out and slapped Pip on the rump. "You look as if you've been here half the night," I said. Gatti lowered her eyes and shook her head dumbly. "Oh, Gatti, when I reach Jerusalem, I will send you a message. I'll try to." Gatti stared at the ground. "Don't matter," she mumbled. "It does matter," I said. "We're friends."
"Can't be," Gatti replied. "Not with the likes of you."
"But we are. We rescued Sean when she went through the ice, and we separated the bulls and drove off the wolves together. Didn't we?" Gatti sniffed.
"You could load up," she said.
"Nobody's awake yet."
"I can help, can't I?"
"You're frozen."
"When you coming back?" Gatti demanded.
3 years, I said. Two, maybe.
Gatti shuddered and hunched her shoulders.
"Go on, Gatti," I urged. "Get out of this cold. I'll see you before I leave."
Gatti looked at me. She gazed at me as gravely as the painting of Mary on the church wall, and her long eyelashes flickered. Then she turned away.
Nine and my brother and sister and Ruth, our chamber servant, were still asleep, so I hurried back across the hall, avoiding the fourth and fifth steps, and the ninth and tenth, the ones that always creak. I ran up the staircase and along the gallery to my freezing writing room.
That's where I've hidden my seeing stone since Merlin gave it to me last summer. We were up on top of Tumber Hill when he unwound this saffron bundle. Inside it was a flat black stone, my obsidian, just a little larger than the palm of my hand, deep as an eye of dark water, and it flashed in the sunlight.
"Until the day you die, you will never own anything as precious as this," Merlin told me. "But no one must know you own it, or see it, or learn anything about it."
Merlin is right. My seeing stone is my other world, my guide, my echo. I can't leave that behind. I pulled the stone out of the gap in the wall and ran back downstairs. I went straight out to Pip and jammed the saffron bundle into the very bottom of one of the saddlebags. All morning I was very busy. I cut reed scabbards for my quills, and shaved acorn stoppers for my ink bottles, and I wrapped my valuable parchment pages in shaggy towels. I stuffed my saddlebags with writing materials and clothing, and in my wooden chest, which is going to be sent after me, I laid more clothing, my new flight of arrows, my ivory chess pieces, and my mail coat. Then I went round the village and found Merlin and Oliver the priest and Jankin, who was mucking out the stables, and took my leave of them. But Gatti and her father, Hum, weren't in their cottage.